This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Yang Bahagia Tan Sri Datuk Dr. Saleh bin Haji Muhammad Noor has spent the better part of his life protecting Malaysia's natural capital, with a long illustrious career to his name, including as the first Director General of the Forest Institute of Malaysia, or FRIM, and the President of the Malaysian Nature Society, MNS, for 30 years. He is an outspoken and highly respected conservationist, unafraid to challenge projects that are detrimental to the environment, and he was instrumental in achieving things like the gazettement of Endau Rumpin and Belum as national and state parks, respectively. He was also instrumental in getting what is now known as the Kota Damansara Community Forest protected from development. So ahead of Merdeka Day, he's joining me today to talk about his ongoing work in protecting what's left of our natural environment and how we can strike a balance between economic and environmental sustainability. Welcome, Tan Sri. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Lovely to have you on the show. Always a pleasure to speak to. Tan Sri, I mean, maybe we can spend the first part of this interview just talking a little bit about you and your career. Maybe you can share, you know, what your early days were like, you know, what first sparked your love for nature and our natural world.
Thank you, Juliet. That's 8 decades ago. So now you know how old I am, how young I am. I grew up in a small village called Dinke in Inas, some 10 kilometers from the main road of Kuala Pelan Tampin. And my house is the last house in that village. And next to it was the jungle, basically, and rubber plantations behind my house. So at night, we could hear tigers roaring, literally.
Wow.
I spent my young days frolicking in the paddy fields, playing with leeches, linta, and up in the hills with pachat. I was not afraid of them. And we used to catch fish. We used to make ponds along the river. And you can see the large leeches, as long as 6 inches long, but as thick as your thumb, floating in the river. I was playing around in nature ever since I was young. But the love of nature really sparked when I was studying forestry in Adelaide and Canberra. I wanted to do medicine, actually, but the top student in the Royal Military College was always awarded a medical scholarship, and I was a top student. But apparently, that year, the ministry, Armed Forces Ministry, did not give a medical scholarship for the top student in the Royal Military College. And I had not attended the Jabatan Perkhidmatan or the public service interviews. So the only option was the Colombo Plan Scholarship to Australia, because I wanted to go to overseas. Mm. And I have no regrets. I have no regrets at all. I still got a PhD. Yeah. So they called me a doctor. So yeah. Dr. Hutan. Yeah. I've enjoyed my life. I've enjoyed my life very much. And being involved in nature is something that I feel privileged. Not many people have had the experience that I have had. Most forestry graduates, when they graduate, prefer to become tuan, as district forest officers, you know, a big chair, big office and stuff, and people call you tuan. But I opted to do forest inventory, spend my time in forest, roaming in the forest. And that was how I started that love for nature until now.
And I was reading, you know, when, you know, in your early career, you spent years undertaking forest inventory. You spent months, you know, camping in virgin forests. What were some of the things that struck you about Malaysian forests, you know, when you first started your career?
Well, upon return from Australia, I worked in FRI and opted to do what they call then the forest resources. And then later on, after I came back from a stint of 13 months in Holland, I was assigned to the United Nations program in Malaysia with the Forestry Department. Mm-hmm. And I was assigned again to undertake the first National Forest Inventory. And this was an opportunity for me to really spend time with my trees and the forest. And the longest period I spent in the forest is 2 months.
Wow.
Without coming out. And during the time, you don't have Wi-Fi, you don't have handphones to keep in touch. So if you're out there for 2 months, you just tell the driver, the Land Rover driver, oh, tunggu saya sini on such and such a date, and hopefully you come out alive, and hopefully the driver is there when you come out. So just pray. So Alhamdulillah, nothing untoward happened. And my crew was six of us. Myself, a uniform forester staff, support me in my inventory work, and five laborers. The laborers are to cut rentices or lines in the forest for the plots, then to set up the plots in the forest. They measure one chain to the left, one chain to the right. And then they identify the trees, measure the trees, assess the height. And we did this for months. Day, week in, week out. And those are fun. We're out on our own. And they had lots of stories to tell about those days in the forest.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading that, you know, you saw with your own eyes, you know, rampant, uncontrolled destruction, you know, of thousand-year-old trees. You know, you saw, you saw those sorts of things happening, isn't it, during that time as well?
Yes, it was the time of the late Tun Razak, land development schemes, FELDA. This was part of the national scheme to improve rural poverty, which I fully agree. And I'm not against FELDA schemes. I think that one of the, to me, one of the successes in Malaysia addressing rural poverty. But at the same time, they destroyed a lot of forests as part of the process of conversion, land to agriculture, rubber at the time, and now to oil palm. But then, thank God, we have certain areas which have been conserved. One is Taman Negara, of course, and National Park. But that's where I promoted Endau Rompin to be conserved, and later Bloom. So we did the Endau Rompin expedition, which to my mind was one of the highlights of my career, where we had hundreds of small children flown by helicopter to Endau Rompin, because top brass of Royal Malaysian Air Force were my friends. So as part of the exercise, because they had to exercise flying, so as part of the exercise of flying, they flew hundreds of students from KL to Endau Rompin to expose the students and also to take scientists to nature in Endau Rompin. And we had lots of fun there in Endau Rompin. And I published a coffee table book on Endau Rompin. And then we had the Bloom expedition, and we published also a coffee table book on Bloom. And the Rompin resulted in the second national park in Peninsula Malaysia.
Correct.
And Bloom was gazetted and is now a state park. And so we have large trunks of land, of natural forests, of undisturbed forests, with some parts of the log, as now conserved as parks and managed by respective agencies within Perak and Johor, which to my mind is one of the prides that I cherish, that I can say I achieved in my life. And now we're addressing Kota Damansara. Kota Damansara, as you know, was the oldest forest reserve in the country during the time of Ketoyo, the Menteri Besar. He had carved out Kota Damansara for development.
Yeah.
So I objected, and Syukur Alhamdulillah, he was removed from Menteri Besar, and the successor after the election, the Wakil Rakyat there, Elizabeth Wong, she promised to re-gazette as a forest reserve, and now it is back as a forest reserve, and the first forest reserve managed jointly by the community and the forestry department,
mm-hmm.
by the Friends of Kota Damansara.
Okay.
And now we have set up the Friends of Bukit Kiara, trying to conserve the large trunk of Bukit Kiara forest, which is basically a forest rubber plantation. This was proposed in the olden days, be the first, not the olden, many years ago, in the earlier days, to be the first botanical garden, but it never came to fruition. And so the trunk of rubber plantations is a wonderful area next to Taman Tun, and we hope that that will continue to be gazetted as a park, urban park in the future. So many of these things are still in the pipeline, some successes, some not so successful yet. But my stint as president of the Malaysian Nature Society is one of the highlights of my career. 30 years as president is a long time. longer than Tun Mahathir was prime minister.
Correct.
But he got paid and I did not. Major difference. But being president of Malaysian Society was a wonderful experience. One, we had the opportunity to meet people of the same interests, loving nature. MNS is the largest bird group in the country. Mm-hmm. And these groups do bird watching every so often. And one of the highlights of this bird watching is the raptor watch in Port Dickson, in Tanjung Tuan, every year. And these raptors are a huge eagle family, and they come in swarms over Tanjung Tuan every, I think, March every year.
March, yes.
So this is one of the highlights of what MNS does. What else should I touch?
I was also going to ask you about your time as the first DG of FRIM. You know, under your watch, the institute grew into a world-class tropical forest research institute that it is today. What are some of the things from your time at FRIM that you are most proud of?
Well, FRIM, as you know, was the Forest Research Institute under the Forestry Department before. Mm-hmm. And when they appointed me as director of FRI Kepong, I had only 16 research officers and one PhD. Mm-hmm. So I said to myself, how on earth can you do research? In fact, with 16 research officers and one PhD. Lucky for me, I had the late Tan Sri Aniaro, the director of Rubber Research Institute, as my guru. And he advised me, Saleh, you want to develop forest research, you got to make it a statutory body. So it took me 10 long years to do that. And then during the 10 long years, I was crucified in public, I was told off in public, done all sorts of things by my superiors, the Forestry Department, as a selfish individual who wants glory for himself, et cetera, et cetera. And this was told in public, you know? But I persevered. And the icing on the cake was when I invited Tun Mahathir, Yamak Bagatun, when he was Prime Minister, to visit FRIM, the FRI, and there he announced that FRI would be a statutory body, much to the shock of everybody else. And the Forest Department thought that I was the instigator. Actually, no. Yeah.
Well done,
so,
Tan Sri. Yeah.
As a result of that, FRI became FRIM, statutory body. And when I retired, we had 360 research officers, about 80% of them with PhDs in various disciplines, for which I'm very, very proud. If anything that I'm proud in my life is to have developed the human resources that FRIM has to do research in all sorts of areas, specialists in pathology, specialists in botany, specialists in chemistry, in timber. And we developed the first furniture testing lab and the fire testing lab for panel products. In the olden days, you had to test your furniture, you got to send to UK. Or test the panel, you test the plywood for its fire resistance, you got to send to the UK. We set them up with the help of the Germans. And so FRIM boasts of these two major labs, plus others, of course, chemistry lab. We had the first pulp and paper lab. But the pride that I have is that we expanded the botanical work to do the tree flora of Malaya, mm-hmm. which is then expanded to Sabah and Sarawak. And the tree flora of Malaya is the first country in the tropical world that has documented its tree flora into, I think now, 10 volumes at least, I think.
Okay.
A huge volume of work by a team of botanists led by Dr. Francis Ng, the late Dr. Supat Mo, Professor Ruth Q, and a whole gang of botanists. Because taxonomy is a dying art, a dying science. People don't like this thing. I personally hated taxonomy. But it's very important. You have to identify the trees. If you don't identify the trees, you don't identify the plants, then how can you use them? How can you characterize them? How can you grade them? So the whole commercial activities depends on identification. And taxonomy is very important. So the tree flora project was a very important project that FRIM undertook. Then we had watershed studies comparing what happens in trees or forests are logged, what happens to the soil, what happens to erosion, how much erosion is done, is happens after logging, due to logging. That's why all our rivers are basically tertiary in color because of much of the forest are logged. You know?
Yeah.
And the watershed management is a very important aspect of forestry. So these are some of the areas of research that I initiated. But the pride above all is my rubber wood research. Rubber wood in the early days was a waste. Malawata steel mill used some of the rubber wood for chips to fuel its furnaces. But the value then is only about 600,000 ringgit a year. But with the research we have done, rubber wood furniture and rubber wood byproducts have grown in value to about 6 billion ringgit a year in Malaysia itself. And because we have no more rubber plantation, not much anyway, in Malaysia, we have to import rubber wood to supply rubber wood for the rubber wood industries, mainly in Muar. And now if you go anywhere in Europe, in US, you find rubber wood everywhere. Rubber wood bowls, fruit bowls, furniture, chairs, all over the world. And that research in rubber wood was initiated by me. Of course, done by my researchers. But that idea was mooted by me to set up. We set up a rubber wood research committee, manned by different institutions, working together, UPM and MTIB, and then the Rubber Research Institute worked together to develop the research on rubber wood. And to me, that is my success in FRI. And then later in FRIM, many other things as well, as I mentioned.
Okay. And those are amazing achievements, then, Sri. We just need to go for one quick break. When we come back, let's discuss your thoughts on the current state of Malaysia's natural environment. I'm speaking today to Tan Sri Saleh Muhammad Noor, forester, conservationist, academician. It's our Merdeka special today on Earth Matters, and we're discussing Tan Sri's long and illustrious career in conservation. We'll have more after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. With me today, the lovely Tan Sri Saleh Muhammad Noor. He's a forester, conservationist, academician, longtime advocate for Malaysia's natural heritage. And he's sharing some highlights from his career with us. You know, before the break, he shared how he was the DG of FRIM, some of his achievements during his time as the president of MNS, you know, for more than 30 years, longer than Tun M as our prime minister. But now, Tan Sri, you know, hoping to ask you this, you know, often conservationists, environmentalists, they're branded anti-development, emotional, sometimes even impractical. But we clearly can't have infinite growth on a finite planet. What are your thoughts on how we can balance economic development and conservation of our natural resources?
The perception that I'm anti-development is totally wrong. I always believe that we must develop on a sustainable basis. And sustainable development is defined as development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the needs of the future. Therefore, whatever you do, you must also take into consideration what are the needs of the future. But as they say, there's a Chinese saying, when you talk about the future, the devil laughs. Because who knows about the future? Only God, only Allah knows. But that's where human beings in planning, the economic planning unit, the planning units of various ministries, departments, the states must plan for the future so that the future generations will not blame us for destroying the environment, because the environment is so critical in our lives. The air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the soil that we nurture for our food, for our plants, for everything else. That's so critical in conservation. And thus, I'm not anti-development, but I am against unplanned development or mega projects which has not considered the impact to environment. Now, EIA, Environmental Impact Assessments, are useful, but they often only give money, make money for the consultants to do the environmental impact assessment. In the end, it's just just paperwork which is not taken too seriously into consideration. what I am proposing is that environmental social impact assessment. Because not just environment, what are the social impacts of such projects? So I'm proposing, I've written these papers on this, that this EIS should take into consideration the social implications of this as well, not just environmental implications of all these projects. So we call the environmental and social impact assessment. But they have not been carried out. Oftentimes the social aspects have not been given priority.
And you mentioned mega projects. You know, are there any ongoing mega projects here in Malaysia that you are worried about, you know, which you think, you know, is not being done sustainably, which might, you know, just further damage our natural environment and the communities surrounding the areas?
Well, there has still highways been planned right here in Bukit Antara Bangsa. I see parts of the highway connecting Kuala Lumpur across the range towards Ampang and somewhere else. I can't remember the highway's name, but it's a mega project and it's creating a swath through forest, you know. And then, of course, highways in Rawang destroyed a lot of the rich kapur forests. And then, of course, the ECRL project, I'm not sure to what extent, although as far as I know, they do not go through forests for the moment because they go along the coast. But there could be some areas of sensitive environmental areas, such as swamps, for example. Swamps are a major important component of the ecosystem. So these are areas of environment that major projects should take into consideration. Besides that, they also should take consideration the Orang Asli villages. That's where the social impact, to take consideration the impact on the social, the Orang Asli and local communities, what the impact on the local communities as well. Of course, they can provide economic benefit in the long term, but on the short term, there could be negative impacts that must be taken into consideration.
Definitely. And, you know, as far as you're concerned, you know, I mean, in your opinion, where do you think Malaysia stands today in terms of environmental sustainability and conservation? You know, where are we now? What are the challenges that remain as far as you're concerned?
Well, Gillette, in a scale of 1 to 10, I would say 5.
Ayo. That's not good at all.
Oh, well, there are some good things that Malaysia has done, admittedly. You know, the land development scheme, yes. The highways, the roads, our communication system is very good. But I think we should move towards more massive public transport. The Fast Train program, for example, from Singapore right up to Perlis, right up to Kota Bharu in Pahang. So the town should all be connected by fast trains so that we don't have to drive. Besides the negative impacts of pollution, carbon monoxide, we waste a lot of time in traffic jams. And if government can only invest into large-scale fast trains, for example, in Japan, in China, investing tons of money on major infrastructure of fast trains. You can travel from, I've traveled from Beijing to Guangzhou to Hangzhou by fast train, traveling at 350 kilometers an hour, which is fantastic. You don't feel it, you know? The only feeling you had when another train passes by, you go, boom, 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 and that's it. And you hear a train pass by. Otherwise, it's so smooth. These fast trains are fantastic. And they are electric, there is some form of pollution, but much less than using diesel or petrol. So to me, government must invest in long, fast train connections between all the major cities and the rural areas as well, you know, so people can travel from one place to another without driving cars.
Definitely. And I mean, that's something I know that, you know, you'd like to see happen. But, you know, if you could have the ears of our leaders, what is the message that you would have for them? You know, what are the specific things, aside from public transport, that you would like to see action taken on here and by whom?
Well, one of the greatest problems we are facing, Juliet, is climate change.
Yeah.
I've been to Antarctica 4 times and I've seen personally the ice from the glaciers collapsing before my eyes. And government must recognize that climate change is real. It must address it. How do you address climate change? This starts with policy. then with strategies, then with actions. But in our country, land is the responsibility of the state. So the state must come into forests play a major role. We have a program of planting a million trees. Singapore has a program of planting a million trees, and they're doing very well. We've been talking about it. I'm not sure whether we've planted four trees or not. I mean, that's a bit more than four, but the issue is we should be planting a billion trees, not a million trees, because we have such big land area. You must plant more trees and so that they can sequester more carbon, create more harmonious environment for people. You must create more parks. Have you been to South America?
Sadly,
all the highways, the left and the right side of the highways are all parks where people can have recreation. And these parks are not small. These parks could be along the highway, all along the stretch of the highway, could be maybe 50 meters wide, swaths along. Yeah? And during the weekends in particular, people use this for recreation. Yeah? And they want, but it's too late for Malaysia because you're not planned for such things. And of course, we have the topography to take care. But whatever it is, we must have more parks in Kuala Lumpur, in the major cities. At the moment, we have Taman Tugu, Lake Gardens, then, of course, the one near the hospital there, near the lake. The lake was because of tin mining. But the issue is, we have not enough parks in this country. And we go to Lake Gardens in the weekend, it's full of people. Same with Taman Tugu. So we should create more parks, not just in KL, in Seremban, in Johor Bahru, Kota Bharu, all the major cities in the country, in Sabah, Sarawak as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's lacking. And what is needed is planning. You must plan. Planning is the beginning. And we must plan for all this for future generations. That, to my mind, is an area of concern. So transportation, public transport, parks, and of course, waste disposal. Have you ever driven in the old Karat Road from Genting to Gombak, past the Orang Asli Hospital? Yes. Have you driven through that?
Yes, yes, I have.
Beautiful road. But there's a dumping ground everywhere by illegal dumpers throwing building material, whatever it is, all scattered all over the place. And I used to complain to the minister, you know what they do? They just bring a bulldozer and push it onto the side. They don't take that out and deposit that in a proper rubbish dump. No, they just bulldoze them over the side and just pollute the rivers down below. I mean, which is ridiculous. But these are the irresponsibility of our population at the moment. And you see rubbish dumps everywhere near where I live. When you drive, you find, you know, because there are no proper disposal areas for domestic waste. You know? And of course, the squatters, the illegal squatters, they are worse, you know, because the municipality do not service these areas in terms of waste disposal. So they dispose themselves, this domestic waste everywhere. Yeah. And you know, plastic is the cancer of our society. Plastic disposal, to my mind, they should ban single-use plastic. And the practice of shops now, unless you bring your own containers, you pay 25 cents. I don't think they should pay 25 cents. They should pay $2 for each plastic, in my mind. Then really inhibit them. 25 cents? Yeah, apa 25 sen? You charge them $2, then they'll think twice, but not bringing their own containers. So all this are part of the building the culture of looking after the environment. Small, but when you all add them up, it's significant. And now we have biodegradable products. I'm on the board of a company in Kedah that produces biodegradable products, food containers, and stuff, from bagasse, from sugarcane waste. And now we're looking at rice straw. And you throw them out, and within 2 weeks becomes compost. So you tap out your meals in this in containers, which are biodegradable. So these are the technologies that are already in place that should be promoted and not use single-use plastic. You must, in my mind, they should ban single-use plastic. And the other, of course, is air conditioning. We cannot live without air conditioning. You know, I have air conditioning in my house now, but you know, I use it at minimal. At night, I switch it off. When I go to sleep around midnight, I switch it off. I just put the fan on. Sometimes people have air conditioning throughout the night and they sleep with thick blankets because it's cold. Why don't you switch off the aircon, switch on the fan, so you don't have to have a thick blanket? Such simple things like that. Because air conditioning is the major component of greenhouse gas. So, to my mind, one is climate change and two is loss of biodiversity. And loss of biodiversity, Juliet, is akin, this is my own quotation, loss of biodiversity is akin to burning your library books before you've read them. Because part of the biodiversity may hold the secret to cure cancer, diseases. That's why the orang aslis never heard of cancer, never had cancer before, until they went to live in Sungai at the center in the Gomba there, get exposed to local population, then they have all sorts of diseases. But you go to the orang aslis in the Ulus, and I've been there when I did forest inventory, none of them had cancer. They were healthy because they live of the of nature. They live of plants, you know. Yeah. Salad, natural products. You can live off them and not depending on meat. I personally don't eat so much meat. Because to my mind, we can live not as a vegetarian, but minimize your intake of meat. That's part of your contribution to protecting the environment.
I mean, there are things that, you know, each and every one of us can do. And I mean, I think another thing, you know, not just planting trees, we also should protect whatever forests we have left, right? I mean, that's an also important part of it. Yeah.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Whatever we have. You know, a few years ago, maybe when I was still Dr. Jan Frim, the German Minister of Environment came to Malaysia and the minister asked me to take him on a helicopter ride from Kuala Lumpur to Terengganu. And all along the way, it was, where are the forests? Where are the forests? I said, you're looking at them, all right? They thought they're rubber plantations. No, I said, they're national forests. All the way, except some areas, of course. Yeah, we had Taman Gara, we had forests, beautiful forests all the way. And I went to Redang, Pulau Redang by air from Subang just last week. And I was amazed at the greenery all along the flight. And just a small 14-seater flight. And I could see below me all the beautiful landscape of forests all over. Of course, there's swaths of land development here and there, felder schemes and stuff. But our country is fairly well forested, and we should maintain that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tan Sri, for joining me today. Before I let you go, you know, we're heading into Merdeka Day and Malaysia Day. Any final message that you'd like to leave, you know, your fellow Malaysians with? Anything at all?
Well, we all look forward to Merdeka, and then 16th September, Malaysia Day. But what I'd like to appeal to our Malaysians is to love this country, respect this country, and above all, be patriotic to this country. We owe our life to this country. Of course, many of them have migrated. I have some friends who migrated as well. Fine. But for those who desire to live in this country has tremendous things to offer. Tourism, we have the seas, the lakes, the rivers, the mountains, we have the caves, we have beautiful Malaysia. And whenever I land from overseas, I always recite to myself the poem Patriotism. Bridge the man whose soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, this is my own, my native land. Whose heart hath never within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from a foreign land. I've forgotten the wording. Patriotism is a beautiful poem because to my mind, Merdeka Day implies patriotism to the country, a willingness to die for this country, a willingness to serve this country, a willingness to create multiracial harmony. My concern is that too much segregation of races in the country. My best friend was an Indian. My best friend now is a Chinese. And unfortunately, my best friend, he passed away. He was a lawyer. We went to school from the time he was 6 years old. And we remained friends for 70 over years, as close as can be. So that friendship between races, Juliet, is something we must nurture. And for that, you must make an effort. Racial integration, racial harmony is not something that comes from the air. We must make it work. That, to my mind, is critical as we approach Merdeka Day, not just the environment, etc., but racial harmony so that we live in harmony. And above all, don't be jealous of others. Others may have a big car, so what? We still reach the same destination. Be satisfied with what we have.
Yeah.
And finally, the lesson that we all learned recently was stay away from corruption. My late father told me, even if it's 1 cent, Saleh, don't take it. And I have fast to that advice. Throughout my whole life, whether with M&S, whether World Endurance, whether with Yasan, Sultan Mizan, with people offering the money, but I refuse. That, to my mind, is very, very, very important. Integrity. And the recent events, to me, really put shame to this country, where money becomes the root of all evil. We need money, yes. But as Mahatma Gandhi said, the world has enough for everybody's needs, but not for everybody's greed. And when everybody becomes greedy, the only thing that results is destruction of our lives. And that we do not want. So enough is enough. How much do we need to live? Nothing, not much. So listen to the great Mahatma Gandhi. The world has enough for everybody's needs, but not for everybody's greed. And greed is a destroyer of our country if we are not careful.
Thank you so much, Tan Sri, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Tan Sri Dato' Dr. Saleh bin Haji Mohamad Noor, forester, conservationist and academician. We were talking about his long, illustrious career in conservation. If you missed any part of our conversation today, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/earth or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.